RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. Josh, when we're done with this episode, I think we need to consider just, like, hanging it up. I'm going to change the locks to the podcast studio, and that's it. We're done.
That's it? Can I continue on my own? Can I just do it by myself?
No, you're not allowed to do that.
Okay.
I'm a mean boss.
Do I get to keep the uniform?
Nope. I'm going to keep all the uniforms. I'm going to put them away in storage until we need them for next season.
okay. All right. Well, that's good, because I already sold a bunch of stuff anyway. I didn't tell you, but I just...
Were you putting it up on eBay?
I've just been putting it up on eBay, so... so I guess it's good timing.
Well, I guess so. Well, why don't you give us a little sneak peek at what the episode is we're going to talk about. I'm sure it's got something to do with what I was just mentioning.
No, not really. Actually, they catch some bad guys and they go to Big Belly Burger. That was pretty much it.
Oh.
Oh no, I'm thinking of a different. This is a different one. This is disbanded, right?
Yes.
Oh, episode 18 from season 5, the one that aired on March 29th, 2017.
That is it. Yep.
Disbanded, right? That's right. Now my memory's coming back. It was written by Rebecca Bellotto, directed by JJ Macaro, and Josho is about to give you the briefo. Well, basically what we do is we pick up right where we left off last week when Oliver walks into the Arrow cave after being tortured by Adrian Chase. Well, he tells the team it's over. That's it. No more. Team's disbanded. Just pack up your stuff and go home. Maybe, hey, if you could maybe grab me the Bactine and Neosporin before you leave, though, that would be good.
He should have said that before he told them they were disbanded, actually.
Yeah. But before you're disbanded, can you give me a Band-Aid? Because I've got an arrow hole in my shoulder, and my tattoo is gone from a blowtorch. So just maybe. Yeah. Some gauze, something. Well, anyway, Oliver's finished. He's broken. Chase has beaten him. He truly believes that everyone he touches is worse off. And his past is a burden that only he must bear. Well, Diggle's having none of this. You know, he tries the old let's sit down and work this stuff out trick. But Oliver refuses to let anyone burst his mope bubble.
I can't take my ball and go home.
So anyway, the team decides to have a go on their own. You know, they're just going to, you know, they're okay, we've been doing this vigilante stuff for a while. We could probably do it without Oliver. You know, to some varying degrees of success. Actually, I don't think they succeeded ever, did they?
No.
But they were doing big stuff. You know, they could have done some of the little stuff. They just never had a chance. Oliver, on the other hand, he is so desperate that he asks his old Bratva brother, Anatoly, to just go ahead and just kill Chase for him. But, you know, you got to remember, the Bratva does not do anything for free. Okay?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the price may be a little high, but Oliver is ready to pay it. That's how broken he is. Until the team, you know, keeps getting in the way. And Diggle finally gets through to his friend. So Oliver asks Anatoly to stand down. But, you know, once you make a deal with the Bratva, there's no going back and remaining friends. Which I was surprised he was surprised about. So he asked this guy to come all the way over from Russia, which can't be cheap. Bring, you know, 50 of your best men, whatever.
Sure,
know.
Yeah.
And then I'd like you to kill this guy for me, you know, just for old time's sake. Really
no
appreciate
problem.
That. Okay. Yeah. And okay, yeah, I'll give you all this stuff. Nah, never mind. Forget it. That's fine. Just go back. It's fine. I'm good.
I changed my mind.
Yeah, he totally changed his mind. Well, anyway, meanwhile, Felicity's been working overtime to publicly identify Prometheus as Adrian Chase. And once she does, Chase breaks free from custody, and he's now on the loose and out for blood. But based on his musical playlist, he's in a good mood.
Absolutely. You know, nothing says I'm ready to go on a killing spree like the Rascals. All right. Well, you know, that's the thing with the Bratva are the worst when it comes to, stopping. I don't want this to happen anymore. It's like, really, really strenuously object. It's like, nope, sorry. We're going to go through with it. So, all right. Well, we do have a couple pieces of news for this week. I guess the first thing I want to just mention is that Arrow, as well as the remainder of the – well, I guess not the remainder of the CW shows, because Legends of Tomorrow is going to wrap up next week per usual, per normal schedule. But the other two shows plus Arrow, they're all taking a hiatus until the last week in April. So Arrow will return on April 26th on that Wednesday there. We also got some interesting information that Katie Cassidy – is going to be returning as a series regular. And my first thought, which was my first thought last time they said she was going to be on the show, was how are they going to do that? They've made it clear, I think, that it'll be Black Siren that will be coming back, the Earth 2 metahuman version of Laura Lance. And she, Katie will be on the last two episodes of the season, and then a series regular for season 6. So I think that's going to be really interesting, Josh, for two reasons. One, just having the whole Laurel's back, but it's not really Laurel vibe going. So, you know, there'll be characters that try to interact with her, but of course she's at least what we've seen of the character so far, she's pretty brusque, I guess, more solitary.
Yeah.
But also you'll have two metahumans with the Sonic Cry powers, Laura Lance and Dinah Drake, from the comics Black Canary 1 and Black Canary 2. So I think that will be really interesting. And I enjoy where they had gotten Katie Cassidy on the show, and I'm really optimistic about how this is going to work. I think there's a lot of interesting things they could be doing with this. So we'll see.
I'm happy for it too. Yeah. I think that she really developed as that character, even though she's kind of a different one now, but just the whole idea of it, I think it'll be fun.
And then for fans of comics, Mark Guggenheim is actually writing a new comic, but not for DC. He is writing a new series called X-Men Gold, which goes on sale next week on April 5th, 2017. What Marvel's doing is they've had their big event, and they are bringing out all sorts of new X-Men titles, and they are splitting the team into two titles, X-Men Gold and X-Men Blue. X-Men Blue is the original X-Men team led by Magneto, and then X-Men Gold is sort of the new X-Men, the X-Men that got introduced in Giant Size X-Men number 1 back in the early 70s. So Kitty Pryde is the leader of the team, along with Nightcrawler, Colossus, Storm, Old Man Logan, and Prestige, which I didn't know who that character was because that's a new code name for Rachel Gray, who is a mutant telepath from the future and the daughter of Jean Grey and Scott Summers from one of the many alternate futures in the Marvel Universe. So it's been getting some good pre-publicity. I don't know that anyone's actually had a review of it yet, but it looks really interesting. There's some interviews with Mark Guggenheim out on the web if you're interested about that, and you can go see what he's writing with the X-Men, probably one of Marvel's premier superhero teams.
Well, Guggenheim's a great writer, so I think it should be good.
I, I, I haven't really. I know he's done some stuff. He worked on the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Comic for Marvel about a year and a half ago. But I didn't really. I only read a couple episodes, a couple issues of that. I'm really interested to see how he works with, you know, the X-Men, which is, you know, like straight out superheroes, mutants, people with tons of powers and stuff. And how, you know, see how he really lets all the creative juices flow. Obviously, a lot of stuff that he can't do on the TV series. So it'll be interesting to see what he does there. All right. Well, let's get into talking a little bit about Disbanded here. As you mentioned, it pretty much picks up right after the previous episode, and Oliver's getting himself bandaged up, and he is in a world of hurt in many ways. He's physically damaged. He's emotionally damaged. He's mentally damaged. He's just really messed up. Chase is really taken the control that he exercised over Oliver and allowed him to, you know, do what Chase wants, which I guess what I'm wondering at this point is, do you think, since Chase has always been so many steps ahead, do you feel that this is what Chase was looking to have Oliver do, like just kind of like crawl into himself and just let whatever happen in his city? Or, you know, do you think Chase could have predicted Oliver falling to this depth?
Yeah, I think this was his plan. And like you said, he had been like 10 steps ahead of him. Actually, everybody has mentioned that he's been 10 steps ahead. But now I don't think he is. Like, I think he got to his goal. I think this is what he was trying to accomplish. And from here, I think he's just kind of toying with him, right? But I don't know that there's much more he could push him. So I don't know if he has a bigger plan after this. I feel like he just kind of wanted to continue to torture Oliver by making him feel like he couldn't do anything about Chase. You know, he can't turn him in. He can't reveal him. He can't.
Yeah.
And you could see that in the scene where he walked into his office with the knife, you know. I mean, he knew he wasn't going to, you know, kill him or stab. Yeah. If he had tried to attack him, he knew he could stop him. You know, at least that's what he thought. So I think that's what he wanted him to do, is get him to this point. And from here, that's kind of where Oliver starts to get the upper hand, is because now he can be unpredictable.
Right. So Chase had this plan to basically break Oliver, but you think he really didn't have any foresight beyond that?
I don't think so.
And so basically Oliver's this broken person now, and I think you're right. It's kind of like he's a caged animal, right? He really has nothing else left to lose, so he's just going to strike back in these really unpredictable ways. Or ways that Chase hadn't predicted yet, you know, things that he wouldn't see, like, you know, the fact that his team could, or that, you know, that Oliver would hire the Bratva, or that his team would be able to break the encryption on the, whatever, the video graphic thing that blurs his face.
I wrote that down, what it was. I can't find it now, but yeah.
yeah, whatever that was called.
The optic scrambler. There it is.
Ah, there we go. The one thing that I found, since you mentioned the knife, when he throws it down on the desk, the one thing that I thought, and of course Oliver is probably not thinking this, is that there's Chase's fingerprints are all over this, and that's obviously a knife like was used to kill all these other people. SCPD's got copies of that. That should be turned in as evidence.
For sure. Well, you notice, look, again, Oliver never touches it. So he may still have it in his possession.
Yeah, that's true. Not that it necessarily matters, given the end of the episode, but let's work through a couple other things here. So Oliver gets desperate. Do you think that's, I feel that's a pretty appropriate word, right? enough to call the Bratva in to his city. And the one thing that, you know, he's been very adamant about for the last 5 years is that this is his city. He protects it from anybody that comes into it. And the Bratva is easily as bad as any number of villains that, he's had to face. Now, the only difference being, of course, that Anatoly is the head, the praka of the Bratva. But, you know, that shouldn't really matter. It's, they talk about how they should have some kind of history together. But, I mean, it's a criminal organization. And not only, you know, are they wanting to steal stuff, they're wanting to steal medicine in order to formulate drugs. So they're taking stuff from people that actually need it, and then they're going to make something worse and give it to junkie, you know, to people, and, you know, make them addicted and turn them into junkies and stuff like that. And Oliver, like, doesn't even bat an eye. He is so focused on that end goal of, you know what, they're going to come in and they're going to kill Chase for me. So pretty much any deal that I have to make is worthwhile. And I just think that really shows how far the character has fallen in the last few episodes. Though I think you could probably argue that we were kind of headed on this trajectory given Prometheus's angles, you know, throughout the rest of the series. But that's a really interesting departure from previous seasons for Oliver to, you know, to get to this point. And I kind of wanted to get your take on it and what you thought about, you know, Oliver's state of mind and the story arc that takes him to this point.
Well, you know, you mentioned how obvious it was that Chase had broken him. And what really made it obvious for me is that Oliver is really just choosing to believe Chase. He's choosing to decide that's who he is, and there's nothing I can do about it. I'm just going to have to live with it. And like I said earlier, you know, bear that burden on my shoulders instead of trying to change. Because for the last, and I think I might've talked about this a little bit last week. I think that in order to come back, he's got to realize that, he doesn't have to be that person anymore. Just because he's been that person in the past, he can move on from that and continue to improve himself and try to become a better hero. I think we've seen him become a different kind of hero every season. And, you know, I think he finally does that. I think Diggle finally gets through to him and says that when he compares him to, himself, you know, when Diggle compares Oliver to him. And I don't know. I think I said in our Flash episode this week, when they don't consider other options, I think it can sometimes seem like the writers are trying to rush through this, but I don't feel like that's what it was this time. To me, I feel like he really was just emotionally damaged and just couldn't see past what Chase wanted him to see. And that was, you're a bad person, Oliver, and you've done some horrible things, and that makes you this person, the kind of person that you've been trying to fight against all these years.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Which really is putting both sides of his brain, you know, against each other.
Yeah.
Probably in the way that he thinks, you know, which is why he's kind of going down this path.
Well, you're saying both sides of his brain is both sides of his personality, well, you know, between Oliver and Green Arrow. It's that's
right.
Fighting against his, right?
And one of the things I mentioned a couple weeks ago on the show was that Oliver can't really understand the decisions, or he can't see past the decisions he doesn't understand. And that's really where Chase has kind of led him down this path, this mental path to this dead end. And, you know, Oliver is unable to turn around. Like, he's just kind of standing facing the wall because Chase has led him here. And through a series of logical conclusions, though the logic may be twisted. He's pointed out these things, as you just mentioned, to Oliver, and Oliver, you know, like you said, chooses to believe him rather than just, you know, going on with, making his own decisions about it. I think, we've all had decisions we've made in our life where we're like, oh, that wasn't the smartest thing I've done. But those people that can rise beyond that are the ones that can understand it, realize it was a mistake, and choose to move on. And, you know, and then the people that, you know, can't move on, those are the ones that get stuck and, have other problems and stuff.
That is really hard to do. And I think, I mean, especially with a thing like, you know, Oliver has to deal with a much bigger situation than you and I will ever have to deal with. Right. But that's,
I mean, the biggest thing I got to get over is, you know, making sure that I've killed all the moles in my backyard or something like that. You know,
it's true though. It's a growth mindset that he has to have. Whereas in our culture right now, we really put a lot of pressure on people anytime they make a mistake. Anytime they make a mistake, that like opens people up for criticism from just about every side, you know. And instead of being able to atone for the mistake that they made, people feel like, you know, they can abuse them almost. And so it's a hard thing for people to get over on a normal everyday basis. And when you're talking about making the decision to murder people, I can't even imagine the mental anguish that Oliver's going through.
Yeah. Well, and also like we discussed the other week, Oliver really is blaming himself for all the deaths, you know, that he was, I'll put responsible in air quotes here. I think the one that he can be most blamed for, as we discussed earlier, was Billy Malone's, but he talks about Tommy, talks about Moira. Did he bring up someone? I think Billy was the other one that he brought up.
Laurel.
Oh, and Laurel, right. So, like John had said, John Diggle had said earlier in the season, or maybe this was even the end of last season, is that, you know, the team decides to be there with him. It's not like Oliver's told them they have to be there. It's something they choose to do. And so they take the responsibility for the decisions that they make. And, you know, if they choose to stay and they choose to get in a fight, and if they die, you know, Oliver can't blame himself for these things. And it was interesting that, you know, John was just trying to bring this stuff back up that, you know, I'm not going anywhere. I thought David Ramsey did a great job in this kind of tough love sequence at the apartment where he's kind of yelling at Oliver about all this stuff. It's like, you know, like you said in the brief, they try to have a little talk at the beginning and then they part ways and then they kind of have to come to loggerheads here. And, you know, John basically has to just yell at him and get it through his thick skull that, you know, he's not responsible for this. That
he's got to take a punch too.
and he's what?
He's got to take a punch too. Punch the face.
Yeah, my gosh, yeah.
Which is another thing they've solved this with on CW shows this week. They had to do the same thing to Mick on Legends of Tomorrow.
He got a punch from like six different people, I think.
Yes, he does.
But Diggle really, I mean, he just has to point out to Oliver that he's really no different than he was. And it's fine. If you realize now that the decisions that you made previously were not good decisions, great. It's showing growth. Take it, learn it, understand why that's not good, and move on. But you can't just wallow in self-pity and despair and indecision and not have anything, you know, happen. John also brings up the whole parallel to the issues that he had with his brother when he ended up killing Andy, which I thought was a really useful thematic tool for them to bring back in here at this point as well, because Oliver really had to talk John down from, getting all wrapped up in the fact that he killed his brother. Now, the reasonings were entirely different, but John, you know, essentially was beating himself up for something that he did. And, you know, it was, he really had no other choice, much like Oliver had no choice to kill Damian Dark at the end of last season. And, you know, I don't think the character has changed. I don't think the character Oliver has changed in this arc. But I think the way the character of Oliver sees himself now has flipped completely on its head. He's very much more conscious of his actions and, you know, whether or not he's admitting that he likes killing. I mean, it doesn't mean he really does. He was
compared to what? Tortured. It's different than he was compared to the beginning of the series or the beginning of the season.
Yeah, a little of both. He's a different character than he was at the beginning of the series. We've charted his change over the years, and from being a killer to realizing, well, this is not the way to go, and going completely non-killing, and now, you know, realizing that there is sometimes that line that has to be crossed. But he's always been able to justify that to himself for whatever reason. I mean, the killings that he was doing in the first and second season were still necessary. But, you know, there may have been the subconscious element that they've brought up here in these last couple episodes about when he puts on the hood, you know, he kind of releases the monster and all this kind of stuff. So there may be a little bit of that, but I really don't believe, and I think that's what we were discussing last week is, you know, has the character changed or are we just seeing the character in a different light? I believe just Oliver sees himself in a different light, which is why he's being so hard on himself. He's really, you know, he's been broken, broken down emotionally so that he has a new perspective on these, on his actions.
Yeah.
And he, given where he is in his life right now and having this new perspective, when he looks back on everything, it's a little more shocking to him. And I think that is what helped, you know, break him down. I think it's just the way that Chase was able to kind of present all this to him, though. Like I said, it's all necessary.
Totally agree. And I stand by what I said last week. I do not think Oliver likes killing. I don't think he ever has. It might have been satisfying the first season to him, but I don't think he's ever liked it because he's always been trying to kind of get away from being that kind of a vigilante or a hero, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, there might be a difference too from his violence being an outlet for some sort of, you know, emotion in him versus enjoying it. Because the one thing we really didn't get into last week when we were discussing this was that he doesn't just seek out violence for violence's sake.
Right.
Right? So
I agree. No.
You know, I think I can't remember if it was Chase trying to say this or if it was something that Diggle brought up. Oh, it was this week Diggle said, you could say that you're, you know, any number of things. You could say you're a serial killer. And I wouldn't believe you, right? So, like, Chase could have convinced him probably. Well, and I think he did. Chase might have actually used this, that he was a serial killer, I don't remember. But, you know, but he's not a serial killer. He's targeting people that, you know, I don't know. We kind of start bringing morality in this, you know, that are bad people.
Sure.
It's who makes that decision, but.
Well, it's people that he thinks deserve it because of the illegal actions that they have performed, right? I mean, now he's being judge, jury, and executioner literally, yeah. But But that's, but like I said, you know, it's not, I mean, a serial killer would go out and do it for kicks or for, you know, psychopathic reasons or some kind of a, you know, thread that ties them all together, you know, like in Silence of the Lambs or something like that. But and that's not what Oliver's doing. It's hard. I'm sitting here trying to like justify his killing. But it's difficult to talk about.
Oliver may be a sociopath. He definitely he has some of those tendencies, I think, but I don't think he's psychopathic. And then in the clinical term there, but I don't know. I am not a licensed therapist, so I guess I should have made that claim at the beginning of the show. I like that they kind of break the team down. So he disbands the team because he doesn't want them to become part of his murder spree. Again, it's like totally overblown. The team is destructing a little bit because of Felicity's extracurricular activities, which I want to get to here in a few minutes.
I like how you put that.
I mean she's moonlighting. Yeah, she's moonlighting off the team here, and there's a, you know, the team dynamic is in a flux right now. They're having a shift, as Curtis pointed out. He's the new Felicity, and Diggle's the new Oliver, and then Dinah becomes the new Diggle, which I thought that was a pretty funny scene because of course Renee insists on being Diggle, and you know she's like fine. And then everybody agrees that was very Dig-like. So, I like that they kind of boil it down back to this brotherhood and the brotherhood of Oliver and John. And that does not go unnoticed in an episode where they're talking about the Bratva and Oliver basically disbanding from the Bratva one last time. And I think this time for sure, you know, it's going to take, he's seemingly separated from Anatoly and his crew several times, but I think this is the time that he kind of swears off it. And I think that what we saw last week, kind of foreshadowed that with the burning off of the tattoo. I feel like having the Bratva tattoo removed in the same episode that we saw it being put on him, kind of brings it full circle. And so, you know, the disbanding, not only with Oliver's team, but this friendship that they had. And, you know, they've kind of just come to an understanding at the end of this, you know, five year long friendship or whatever it is.
It's hard to break up with the Bratva after 5 years, you know? I mean, it's very, very emotional time.
Yeah, in Russia, Bratva break up with you. Either way, I think it works, so. So, now you had made a note in here with the flashbacks. We got a little more insight into Anatoly, and plus we got to see him in the present, and you kind of made a note that he's really not the same kind of person that he was 5 years ago, that he's changed a little bit. You want to talk about that just a little bit?
Well, you know, Anatoly has said things to Oliver, both in the flashbacks and in the present day, about, you know, what he could become and what he has become. And yet, you know, Anatoly has always struck me as a good guy. You know, sure, he worked for this criminal organization in Russia that killed a lot of people and did a lot of bad things. But, you know, he's still a good guy. But
there was honor in him.
There was honor. There you go. That is the word I'm trying to express. Even back when Oliver had done some bad things, you know, and last week where he tortured and killed that guy, Anatoly would try to talk reason with him. He stopped Kovar from taking over the Russian government. He had all this good advice, you know, that seemingly good advice that seemed like he was an honorable man with a good heart. Even this week we saw him healing or like getting medicine to sick kids. You know, I mean, they stole it, but then he gave it to these sick kids.
Yeah.
So we see that. Now, you bookmark that with 5 years from that now, you know, present day. And now he's stealing medicine from people that need it. And you can assume there's some kids in there. And giving it, you know, turning it into drugs and making it people addicted. And it's a really bad drug. And it's all to get money for the Bratva. He has now become this thing that he, you know, the kind of person that he took over the Bratva from. Lot like, oh, what's his name that he?
Gregor.
Gregor, yeah. And so.
Well, he mentions, it was either at the end of last week or at the beginning of this week in the flashback when Oliver's talking about leaving, going back to Lian Yu, and that he's only got 48 hours. Anatoly's like, I don't know what I'm going to do without you. I'm worried what's going to happen to me, like what he's going to become. It's, you know, together they seem to
keep each other in check.
Better people,
yeah,
than they are apart. It very much mirrors the Diggle Oliver relationship that they keep each other in check.
Yeah, yeah, it does. It does. That's like the Diggle of Oliver's past.
Yeah.
I you know, and thinking back on it or comparing it to that, that might be why he befriended Diggle, because he saw those kinds of traits in Diggle mm-hmm. that he was getting from Anatoly just, you know, less than a year before he met Diggle.
He's like a black Russian. No. A little 48 hours humor there. So
you know, Anatoly also claims that he's happy. I do not think that he is nearly as happy as he claims he is.
So you think that when he's saying, you know, of course I'm happy, you think that's just he's just kind of putting on a happy face?
Yeah. Yeah. He's an interesting character. I hope there's a lot more to him, but I imagine we probably won't see him much after this season. But matter of fact, he might end up sacrificing himself. That one thing I thought is, and I don't know, this may not have been any kind of a possibility, but you know, so the Bratva's hurting for money. Oliver was a Bratva brother, you know,
yeah.
In Anatoly's eyes still should be a Bratva brother. He's coming to Star City to get all these drugs to sell so they can be, you know, have money. Is there any compromise in there? Couldn't Oliver help in some way that doesn't involve, you know, creating these drugs? I mean, Oliver's still a pretty rich dude, even though, you know, he lost his company and everything. But
yeah, I guess. I mean, I assume there's still some money that Oliver's got somewhere. Yeah, I mean, that's a possibility. They never talked about that. So
I don't know. It seems like Oliver could do something for his friend that doesn't involve, well, okay, yes, you can come in and steal a bunch of illegal drugs and stuff. Go ahead. Yeah. But anyway, I want these two to make amends. I don't want them to hate each other. I don't want them to be enemies.
Yeah. Now, I was thinking we were going to get a little bit more on this next bit this episode, but remember, Kovar is still out there. He's still alive. They showed him, you know, reanimating-ish kind of thing at the end of last week's flashback, which was a little shocking, and I'm surprised they didn't utilize that. So I'm thinking at some point in the rest of the flashbacks in the last 5 episodes here, they're probably going to have to do something with Kovar, unless their plan is to bring him back. That, you know, everyone thinks he's dead and everyone's thought he's been dead for 5 years or longer or whatever. And he comes back in the present, next season. But
maybe.
I just want to remind everybody that I don't know what's going on.
Maybe. Yeah. We don't know what he's doing yet.
So, all right, well, let's talk about Felicity and her Helix buddies.
Oh, dear.
So
we knew this was going to be trouble.
Yeah. I think everybody kind of saw. I mean, Curtis obviously knows that something is up, and he's sleuthing it a little harder this episode. But Do you think she's finally
not stealthier, but harder.
Yeah. Do you think Felicity is finally starting to understand what kind of organization she's working with? Do you think she's got a clue?
No, I don't think so yet. I don't think she's going to realize it until she tries to leave, until she tries to get away from them, and they won't let her.
That's
when she's going to realize it.
Even with them revealing that they know that she's Overwatch and that Curtis is Mr. Terrific.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, it seems like they kind of forced them into, it wasn't really a force. Forcing was more of a coercion into getting her to break into, Cord Laboratories to steal that decryptor for the, what'd you call it?
Optic scrambler.
Yeah. I felt that, you know, because they revealed this information on of their alter egos, and by the way, if they know who Overwatch and Mr. Terrific are, it's pretty foregone conclusion that they know about the rest of the team, who everybody is.
Right, of course. I think they know pretty much anything they want to know. It would be very difficult to keep information from them. I mean, Chase was doing it masterfully, and they still were able to figure out who he was. So, I just don't think that Felicity's worried about it yet, because I think she trusts them. But like I said, I don't think she's going to see the depth of her situation until she tries to get away and can't.
Okay. So what do you foresee any particular options for this?
Take down Helix.
Yeah.
A very tall order. I don't know how you'd be able to do that and still have any secrets. So again, I will speculate that by the end of this season, or if not this season, sometime next season, Oliver's going to have to reveal himself to be Green Arrow.
Well, and I think, like I said last week, I think they're going to get Felicity into a position where she's kind of got to join the team and play ball with Helix to do some things that she really, really doesn't want to. But, you know, there's no other choice for her. She won't necessarily be a bad a villain on the show, but she'll be, you know, kind of stuck working with them against her will, I guess.
Yes. Yeah, that's what worries me.
One final piece here. We got just a teeny tiny bit of Susan this week, which appears to be the kiss-off for her. You know, Oliver kind of says this won't work, and he sends her away, and she knows enough about him now, though we never really saw them have a really good, honest discussion about it. Just we know that she knew who he was, and she mentioned it this week that she knew he was Green Arrow and all that. So she just decides to go. Is this over? Are they done with this part of the storyline? Are they taking Susan off the show? Was this it? So they can have Oliver move on to other Laurel. I mean, other characters. You know, later in the season or next season.
It sure seemed like it, but I have not been the biggest fan of the Susan character in any way, actually. But
sure.
If that was it, though, I mean, it feels very anticlimactic, I guess. I hope they do more.
Especially given all the setup that we had with the character, it felt like there was more she should be doing. But if all of that was just to make it so she knew who Oliver's secret identity was, you know, okay, so what?
Yeah, and in that case, I guess, in touching her life, he really has destroyed her life pretty much. I mean, I don't want to be too hard on Oliver, but, I mean, he really did mess everything up for her. She's in a bad place.
Well, I thought that was a really interesting way to put it. I've never heard somebody refer to it as, I didn't want, you know, how my life touched your life to be like this. I've just never heard somebody put it that way before. I thought that that was kind
of
cool.
I think that's the equivalent of it's not you, it's me.
And then finally at the end, somehow Chase, using his latent ESP powers, knows that the silence by the cops showing their phone back and forth, as opposed to the previous silence of them not showing their phone back and forth, indicates that he needs to now turn around and throw a pen into one of their eyes.
I don't think it was ESP. I think he was ready for that particular scenario. I think he probably knew that was coming. It was just a matter of time, especially since he was in protective custody, which I think Oliver was very happy about, because that way he could kind of keep him out of trouble, sort of, or at least, not out there actively doing things.
Sure.
And so I think, that was part of Oliver's plan, but I think he knew it was coming. And so when he started hearing the phones vibrate, and then he's like, oh, this is it. And even if it wasn't it, he's like, oh, well, I'll just, kill these guys now, and then I'll get it.
Yeah. Well, I was kind of thinking, it's like, usually when the bad guys get into FBI custody, like in Godfather 2, they end up mysteriously dying in some fashion. So I was interested to see Chase escape. Very intense scene. He, pops his stitches out and starts bleeding through his shirt. That was a little intense.
Oof.
And then he goes cruising down the road. Obviously, the cops are not, looking for him coming the other way. They probably wouldn't be able to, know who that he was there or anything. But covered all in blood, listening to the very great "It's a Beautiful Morning" song by the Rascals, which gives a very haunting tone to the end of this episode, with a very upbeat song and a very scary kind of gross
time
ending and stuff like that. So.
I was trying to determine from that final scene where he was headed. Was he headed back to Star City,
or that's
could
what
he
it
have been
like.
Going somewhere else? Did it look like Star City, or do you just assume that it was?
I just assumed it was Star City because, of course, Star City this week was played by Philadelphia the most, I believe.
Was it?
Yeah.
Well, the reason was that in the credits?
No, Star City. No, I'm like, oh, that's a shot of Philly again, because I saw
the reason I ask is because Oliver's son is still in the mix here, and Chase knows Oliver has a son. So that's why I was trying to determine if he's headed back to Star City or if he is on his way to get more leverage against Oliver. Because now he's got nothing.
There is no reason now for Chase to hide anything. He is completely unfettered and in the wind, as it were. So, all bets are off. He could, he could do almost anything to anybody. It's really an exciting end to the season. And as they've said, it's going to be a little bit more personal, in this season, with Chase going after Oliver. It's not really a threat to the city, but it's a threat to Oliver, his friends, his family, stuff like that.
Yep. All of our heroes. The whole team.
Yep.
And he even made that comment to Curtis at the end. He's like, how's your husband? So, it may not be the entire city, but it extends to a lot of different people that we are close to, and that they're close to, their families. So
it's definitely going to be an interesting end of the season. The show has really re-engaged me in a pretty major way here. I'm really interested. And from the feedback we've gotten, I think it's really hit a nerve with the fans as well. Lots of people are letting us know that Adrian Chase is number two in villains for them, behind Slade Wilson. And in some cases, some people even think he's better than good old Deathstroke. So that's quite a feat for the show to go from kind of the depths of season four to this point where they've created a really enigmatic villain.
I don't disagree. I really don't. I don't like to rank things and pick favorites, you know, because things are so different. He's definitely a different kind of villain than Deathstroke. But I would say, you know, he's right up there with me. I really, really am enjoying this performance. So,
well, we got a note from Greg here. I think this was via Facebook. He says, this is in regards to last week's episode. He says, I wasn't really sure. Did you guys like the episode? A lot of your show today was reconciling Oliver's actions throughout the series, but a lot of the season has been about Oliver being the merciless killer in season one, and the flashbacks kind of showing how he became that way. He's had to grapple with kill or no kill all throughout the series, and while he's grown to hate himself for it over the years, he probably did enjoy it when he first got back from the island. Heck, I remember one of our first conversations, one of the first conversations he had with Diggle about how the suit makes him a monster, but he is just a guy without the Green Arrow motif. So I think we did like the episode, if we didn't come out and directly say it. But yeah, you're right. We kind of were talking around a lot of stuff last week, I think.
Well, it's hard to say, you know, because there was a lot of dark and torturous things going on in that episode. So when you talk about, you know, liking an episode, was it a pleasant episode to watch? No, probably not. But it was very dramatic and intense, and I did feel very entertained by it, and therefore, you know, I did like watching it. So,
and it was a necessary piece of the puzzle for the chain that they were going through here.
Yeah, yeah.
Greg also goes on to say, also this episode was amazing because of the acting from both Amell and Segura. Segura is awesome in the show, and I think Adrian is so much better than Slade now. That scene where Oliver finally confesses was a gut punch and one of the best scenes of the series. Season 5 is shaping up to be one hell of a season. I just hope the writers stick the landing. It's not how you start, it's how you finish. And he also said, by the way, thanks for the flashback recap in the previous week. It came at the most appropriate time. And while I only listened to 3.5 years worth of episodes in about 2 months, happy 4-year anniversary.
Oh, thank you very much. You know, I want to – he kind of mentioned there about the acting from Segura, of course. But Stephen Amell has really shown a lot of range for Oliver this season because he's had to go through a lot of different personal stages as Oliver Queen, you know.
Yeah.
And he's – I will just come out and say I think Stephen Amell is a very underrated actor. I think he does a fantastic job with this character who could be very simple and very flat, and he's made him very complex.
He is really grown into the character and grown as an actor over the series. As you would hope any actor who's, you know, done over 100 episodes of a particular character would grow.
And he looks better in wigs now than he used to also.
He does look better in wigs. But I think he's really, I can't really separate the character from the actor now. I feel like he's really incorporated a lot of himself into the character.
I can see that.
Other than the killing part.
We hope.
Hopefully, yeah. You know, he's really found a humanity within Oliver, and it's reasons why I think episodes like this work so well, because we can see that character of Oliver shining through, even if Oliver is having trouble seeing it in himself. And, you know, I think we can really sympathize with Diggle in trying to get, you know, the character to kind of come back to the light, as it were.
Yeah.
And then Sean wrote in to us commenting on the recent episode. He says, show's over, right? Because comics have proven that when the hero quits, it is for good. They never come back. Also, dead characters always stay dead. Always. I'm loving Adrian as the big bad. It's all coming together nicely, and he's screwing with Oliver and company in a delightful way and very evil manner. If this keeps up, he might be my second favorite Arrow villain after Deathstroke, of course. So, see, two different fans, two different takes on it, but really resonating. The villain is really resonating with the fan base, which I think is awesome.
For sure.
And only a couple references that I caught this week. Obviously, the Cord Industries, which was also a location and building in Flash this week.
That was also robbed.
Yeah. Yeah, they have some security issues there. And Game of Thrones got a little nod at the hackers, Helix Hacker House.
Yeah, well, the Helix people, they've got about, what, like 4 months to catch up before it comes back in July, yeah. So.
Yeah. So, another good episode. Looks like we've got some time to wait here about 3 or 4 weeks so before the next episode. So, you know, dust off your wigs, get your plane ticket ready back to Lian Yu, and we'll see you when we return in the end of April. But for now, that's all we've got for this week's episode of Green Justice.
We hope you guys enjoyed listening to this episode, and we enjoyed this episode, just to make it kind of clear for everybody, in case you didn't, we enjoyed it. But also, we'd love to have some feedback from you. If you could just hop over to iTunes and give us a quick review. We'd love to have those positive reviews and just write something in there for people to see what, you know, you guys think of the show, and that way they can maybe try it out themselves and come and join us on the discussion. So, and we also want to hear what you have to say about these shows. If you want to tell us what you're thinking of Prometheus, you think he's better than Deathstroke? Not quite? Or are they tied? What do you think? Let us know. Send us an email, greenjustice@randomchatter.com. Or you can go over to Twitter if you like to write very briefly. You can find us there, @GreenJusticePod. Or, of course, you go to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/GreenJusticePodcast.
And while you're out on the web, you can check out the other shows we do, including Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files, which will be back next week for their final, what do they call it, pod of the season, their final storyline. Or Scarlet Velocity of Flash podcast, which you can find also at randomchatter.com. And you can download all shows because they're available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And, of course, if you're enjoying the podcast, please be sure to share with your friends. And remember, if you don't keep listening, you have failed this city.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.